This fall, Michigan State University's College of Engineering enrolled some 1,300 freshmen into its ranks, the largest incoming class in a decade. More than 200 of those students are women, and that number is up 30% over last fall. That's an encouraging sign for the industry as a whole. Nationwide, far more men enter the STEM fields, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, than women. Now, a conference is taking place this week here at MSU that's seeking to address this shortage and other issues facing women in the industry. We are now joined by Dr. Laura Dillon, Professor of Computer Science and Engineering with the College of Engineering at MSU. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
Also with us, Dr. Ann Fisher. She's an advisory scientist at Strategic Analysis, Inc. in Washington, D.C. She's a chemist who's worked with the defense industry on projects pertaining to portable power and energy and nanomaterials, to name a few. She's also an MSU alumnus and is on the steering committee for this week's conference. Welcome, Ann Fisher.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Why are there so many fewer women in the STEM fields? Laura Dillon?
Well, I think it's primarily a socialization issue, not... We've heard some notorious statements to the effect of ability gaps, and I think that certainly has proven not to be true, that it really, a lot of it is how, in the early years, how women are just, girls are just told that, you know, this is too hard for you. You're either born with the gene or you're not born with the gene. To be able to do math and to succeed in math, and it's certainly, if you look at the data, that's not true. I mean, it's part of it is an issue of getting parents, getting students to realize that these are good professions, that there are you can learn math skills, you can learn computing skills through hard work, and that you can do things that are very socially good and relevant that are important for our society.
Dr. Ann Fisher, do you generally agree with Laura Dillon? And if so, did you experience, what kind of socialization did you go through?
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that it's not an aptitude-based issue. It differs, you know, the number of women differ in different fields of science and engineering, and I think a lot of it is the examples that kids up to, you know, young kids in elementary school and high school and then through the college years, the examples that they see in terms of what people like them are doing. And this, you know, this goes for women or anybody, any other group. And, you know, in my experience, I went to a small college. There were quite a few women faculty in the sciences. I was highly encouraged by my parents growing up. And so I think, you know, having those types of mentoring relationships with people and having that encouragement is really important for everybody, but especially for young girls as they're thinking about what kind of career path they want to go to. Because, you know, in the sciences, you have to start pretty early to get that foundation to move forward in the field, and that's a critical piece.
Laura Dillon, how are you encouraged or discouraged?
I had a high school teacher who singled me out, and I mean, I was in a very unique situation because I was living down in South America where I went to high school, and he singled me out, and he put me on the side, and he gave me books to read, and I had my high school, last class in high school was a two-person class where we taught ourselves, another woman and I taught ourselves calculus. And, you know, so it was very unusual. But I then later experienced many discouraging situations at universities here. But I was lucky enough to fall into a situation where I also had mentors. I mean, I think you get them on both sides, right? You get some people who are very encouraging and others who are just blatantly discouraging.
Give us a blatant example.
A blatant example would be, I won't name the name of the university because they probably wouldn't be very happy, but having the chair of the department tell me when I was applying to graduate school and was graduating from their undergraduate program with a 4.0 that the only possible way I could get in and hope to compete against these men from Wisconsin was if I were to, instead of applying for a PhD program, would go into the program that the training for community college professors. And so I got into the program through the back door and eventually did well enough that they admitted me to the PhD program. But originally I was told that I couldn't get in unless to the program even unless I went to this lesser degree program as opposed to trying to go after the PhD. And this was in math.
Laura, this month you attended an event in Minneapolis called the Grace Hopper Celebration of Women in Computing. Grace Hopper was a Rear Admiral in the U.S. Navy and a pioneer in computer science. She helped create one of the world's first computers, the UNIVAC, back in the 1940s. She's been revered as a founding mother of computer science. We've got a clip here of Grace Hopper from 1986. She just retired from the Navy after 43 years. Here she is explaining a nanosecond to late-night TV host David Letterman.
Well, I could give you a nanosecond.
Okay, now, like I don't even know what that is, Grace.
Well, you see, we started with milliseconds, thousandths of a second, and then we went to microseconds, millionths of a second, and now we talk about nanoseconds. That's a billionth of a second.
Mm-hmm. But...
Well, they told me billionth of a second, and I didn't know what on earth they were talking about.
Right.
Didn't make sense to me. So one day I called over to engineering and said, cut off a nanosecond, send it over to me. And so I've got a bundle of them here, and you can pick your color.
Oh, they come in color. See, I didn't realize that nanoseconds
colors.
Now, in the old days, you only had your choice of white or gray, I think. Now, Gracie, I understand that this is a visual...
That is the maximum distance that light or electricity can travel in a billionth of a second.
No faster, no farther.
And, when an admiral asks you why it takes a damn long to send a message by a satellite, you point out to him that between here and the satellite, there are a very large number of nanoseconds.
All of this is a way to pave the question for you, Laura. What perspectives on women in STEM did you hear at this year's Grace Hopper celebration?
Well, the celebration was really all about looking at the various accomplishments that women have made in the field, and it's quite astounding. So there were different tracks for all the different constituencies. So the students, there were tracks where they could go and they could learn how to succeed in graduate school and why they would want to and what kinds of careers they could expect. There were tracks for professional women in computing to discuss, how they can continue to succeed and climb up the ladders in their fields. And there were also technical tracks that looked at, some of the issues that women have, not just women, but that computing has impacted society and the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very inspiring. And, there are companies all over, national companies can't come and recruit the students there, and so it was a very empowering conference for them to go to.
Dr. Rand Fisher, what are the larger societal implications as far as you see them if we keep recruiting fewer women into the STEM fields?
Well, I think that people talk about diversity in science and engineering and don't really understand why it's important. It's important to so that everyone who is interested in those fields is encouraged to go into them. But it's also based on life experience and background and point of view, and those vary depending on where people came from, who they are, whether they're men or women, or whatever category you might want to talk about. And I think that it affects ideas, it affects creativity, it affects innovation, and it allows for diversity in both who's doing the science and also what science is done and how different problems are addressed, different points of view are brought in for in terms of creativity and how people look at a problem.
Dr. Fisher, what was your MSU experience like?
Oh, I had a great experience at MSU. I was in the chemistry department at Michigan State on the floor in analytical chemistry. And if, we're talking about the percentage of women, we actually had quite a few women graduate students in the analytical side of chemistry. It varied by floor, which would be by physical chemistry, organic chemistry, inorganic chemistry. the number of faculty, the number of women faculty at Michigan State was what's much lower, but we had a group called Women in Chemistry where we, you know, it was sort of a networking opportunity. We did a lot of outreach. It was kind of a way to get people sort of aware of what issues you might face, both in terms of explicit and implicit bias. And by that I mean, by implicit bias, I mean, you know, people have ideas and things that they're sort of unconscious of, and they may affect how you interact with someone. So that whether or not someone's encouraged to be in science is based on potentially their view of what a scientist might look like, those sorts of things. So it was a great experience, both because of the university, but also because of the proactive way that we as graduate students kind of try to integrate ourselves in to the bigger picture.
Could I add to that?
Laura, please do.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the predictions of code.org is that by the year 2020, there's going to be a million more jobs than in the computing area, at least, than there are going to be students produced.
Mm.
And so part of it, I think, is not just a and the diversity is really important, but part of it is even just a numbers issue. If you're neglecting over half your population to even get them interested
to fill these important jobs,
then, you know, you're not looking at half of your talent pool, right? But then I would agree also that it's not just a numbers issue, that teams that, you know, they've shown that teams that are gender balanced and not just gender balanced, but all diverse teams do better, produce better, they produce better products, they tend to deliver stuff on time, under budget, much more effectively than these than teams that don't have that same kind of diversity in them.
How many women are on the MSU Engineering School faculty right now?
I wish I knew that number, but it's not very high. Chemical engineering has always done better in the engineering field. Any of the bio-focused engineering fields tend to do better in terms of getting women, and where you really see the numbers are really low are in mechanical engineering, computing engineering, electrical engineering.
After your comments just a minute ago, Dr. Ann Fisher, would you say MSU is arguably ahead of the curve here?
That's a really interesting question. It's hard for me to say because I didn't go to graduate school anywhere else. I think that in terms of being aware of the issues, there were definitely people at Michigan State that were aware of the issues. I know that Michigan State has an advance grant, which is a grant from the National Science Foundation to increase the representation of women in science and engineering academic careers. And I think that's probably helping. I don't know the details of that. Maybe Laura does. But, you know, it depends really on the university. It depends on the department. People at Michigan State were definitely aware of the issues and willing to talk about them, which I think is a really important first step at the graduate student level I'm speaking of here.
And Laura, what do you hope this week's conference will accomplish?
I think the role modeling issue that Amy already talked to, the fact of, you know, because there are so few women, they don't see one another, they don't always bump into each other in their classes and see the other women professors that are around on campus. And
mm-hmm.
So I think just, you know, having them get together, it's a networking issue. It's building a support group, seeing examples of successful women and finding out the paths that they pursued, what worked for them, how they, you know, made it through. So a lot of it is just kind of giving some good examples and having the young women look up and say, oh yeah, I want to be like that person. I can be like that person. Person had a balanced life. Most of us have husbands and children, and you know, so one of the concerns I think sometimes with women is they can't have it all. And well, no, I mean, you always make some sacrifices along the way, but you can still have a good, rich, satisfying home life and career life. And sometimes the having a good career life makes you better at home, right?
Ann Fisher, how do you feel about being back in East Lansing and participating in this conference?
Well, actually, unfortunately, I'm not able to make it back for the conference this year. But
I misunderstood.
No, that's fine. I was on the steering committee to help put the conference together, and I'm really sad that I'm going to be missing it because it looks like they've put together a really great schedule that includes, you know, sessions on networking and mentoring and communication. And I completely agree with Laura, having that connection, both in terms of professionals at the same sort of career maturity level, and also in between with students and faculty and students and people from the private sector is really very, very important.
We want to thank our two guests this morning, Dr. Laura Dillon, Professor of Computer Science and Engineering at the College of Engineering here at Michigan State, and Dr. Ann Fisher, an MSU alumnus who's an advisory scientist at Strategic Analysis, Inc. in Washington, D.C., talking about women in the STEM fields. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Good
thank
luck.
Thank you.